public records exemptions for town councilmen that did pass. I don't see why the governor won't sign that. So your names and addresses will be exempt from public record, subject to the governor's approval. That's only for current. It's not for former. But they've had a lot of safety issues with various elected officials. Next slide, if you will. Some additional bills. I think I kind of covered that. We can go to the next slide. Other bills of interest that did pass. Senate Bill 818. This bill was, and it's on other bills of interest, less impactful, if you will, because where the outcome of that bill landed. Initially, what this bill was any communications infrastructure, whoever your cable provider here is, AT&T, your telecom, not your water and wastewater and not your electric, but any other communications telecom, if you require the service provider to move it because we're going to widen a road or put in a new sidewalk or change an intersection, the initial version of this bill required the town to pay those full costs to the telecom provider to move their infrastructure. I know. Ultimately, where that bill landed, through a lot of work of many stakeholders, the town's CST collections will be reduced by 7.5% starting next fiscal year. So you receive CST from, I think Revenue collects it and sends it down here, or a portion of the CST Revenue collects and sends it here. The portion that Revenue collects and sends to you will be reduced by 7.5%. That money will be put into a grant fund at the Department of Commerce for the various communication companies to apply for a grant to reimburse their expenses for moving infrastructure. Not great to lose 7.5% of your CST, but a lot better than the original version of the bill. Some other things, there's going to be the big DOT bill. There's a lot of things in that I'm happy to talk about. One of the things is that the town will be able to regulate, especially in this town where people probably use various modes of transportation, requiring ID for people using electric scooters or any kind of electric bicycle or something like that, driver's license. The town will have the option to do that. The DEP will have to create a waste reduction plan for the state, and they're going to solicit input from various stakeholders, such as towns and any waste stakeholders. So I thought that was interesting, and I wanted to put a note that. Next slide. Bills that didn't pass. Does the town have a CRA? No, town doesn't have a CRA. There's a bill eliminating CRAs. That did not pass. A bill that has been of particular interest to this area, allowing UTVs side-by-sides on public roadways. It's come around many years, like 3 or 4 years, and it keeps getting close to passing and not passing. That did not pass this year. There was a bill that I think would be great for a town like Ponce Inlet that would allow tax credits for new construction when you build a building, commercial building, and you build it to LEED certification, and the new versions of LEED and include things like hurricane resiliency, there'd be a tax credit for that. That bill didn't pass, but I think it could come close, and it's a good bill, in my opinion. It just didn't pass, but we hope to see that potentially next year. Next slide. So let's talk about the budget. Right now, looking at just the town, we have a single request that we have through the legislature for some funding. It's not done yet. The state's budget process has only barely started. Kind of what led us to that is that the governor proposed one budget, and obviously the governor doesn't set the budget, but the governor proposes and asks for, and often they take the governor's recommendations, at least in some stride. The legislature, the House and the Senate, they have their two different budgets, and they're very far apart. And to talk about budget, we can't figure out the budget until we figure out how much we're going to take in. So we can't talk about how much we're going to spend until we agree on how much we're going to take in. And our policy proposals, the House and the Senate's policy proposals, are just fundamentally different on how they view taxes. So until they are able to reconcile their tax situation, which I'll get into the tax package in a second, until they're able to reconcile their tax package, they're not able to reconcile how much we're going to spend. And so that is kind of where the budget is stuck in limbo. If you look at the various two tax packages, the House is proposing a significant cut to sales tax, which that goes directly to the state. The Senate is proposing things that are more like the things that we've seen the past couple years, tax holidays on outdoor recreation, tax holidays on concerts, some of the standard. One chamber is proposing getting rid of fuel tax, tax on airplane fuel altogether. And so those, they haven't been able to reconcile that. And then, of course, you have the overarching conversation about property taxes and where is that going to land and how is that going to work. And there is a bill that is actually relevant in almost every slide I've put up there. It's an impactful that didn't pass. It's impactful in the fact that it's in the tax package, and what that bill is, it has to do with local option taxes. That doesn't necessarily affect the town. I don't believe we have any food and beverage taxes or anything like that, but it does impact a lot of the counties. And until they work out that piece and how they're going to do local option taxes, and it's in the tax package, so the bill itself died, but they duplicated the language into the House tax package. So until they conference and work all that out, the budget will kind of just sit in limbo. I want to talk a little bit, I think next slide, about property taxes. So just to give you some historical background, the governor said a while ago we should do something to decrease property taxes. That's a big issue for our citizens, of course, insurances as well. And then the House was like, yeah, we should do that. These are my five proposals. These are the things we need to look at. I think the governor's vision on how that's going to be done and the House's vision on how that's going to be done are slightly different. But the House has got a lot of legislators and staff, and they're made this select committee that the speaker appointed to evaluate proposals on property taxes. And so that they've had two committee meetings, and the first committee meeting, as I said, the speaker came up with five suggestions. They spent that entire committee meeting just talking about those five suggestions and what the impact is on local governments. And then the second committee, they had the state economic office do a presentation on how property taxes work. And at the end of that, I don't know when their next meeting will be, the members, the legislators on the committee were recommended to talk with their local delegation, talk with their local governments in their area, and try to get as much understanding on how your local government spends their money and where it comes from before they move forward. So that conversation, all of that property tax committee is for the 2026 legislative session. So I don't see anything significant from property taxes by the end of this session. And when I say by the end of this session, by the time they finalize the budget. But for next session, this is in play, and it's something to be aware of. I think that's all I have. Questions?
Yes, sir. Artificial turf, because we have a few residents that have done that for dog rocks and dog runs and so forth. Is that impacted by that rule, or are they grandfathered and they can remain, or do they have to do something?
I could have to double check the language and get it to the town manager, but I believe that is all regulation of the use of synthetic turf at single family homes is preempted to the state of Florida, the DEP.
Even though it's already installed.
I would have to double okay. check. Honestly, if you want to give me just a second, I can
double
check.
Because that would be important to us, because we have several of those instances, and if there's something needs to be done, we need to tell the owners that we're aware of what to do.
I would not think that they're going to retroactively. I don't want to misspeak. I'll double check for you.
Thank
yes, sir.
And if to that point, it preempts the regulation of the use of synthetic turf to the state.
So I think you read it verbatim, didn't you?
So for actually didn't, but so what that means is cities and counties could not pass their own regulations going forward regulating the use, the installation, how, you know, where and when you can use them for single family or not. So it prohibits you from being able to regulate it in the future. It would not require those folks that have them now to remove it.
I can, if you'd like me to, Madam Mayor, I can read it. The DEP shall adopt minimum standards for the installation of synthetic turf. So installation of, not already installed, installation of synthetic turf on single-family residence properties that are 1 acre or less in size. And the standards must take into account the type of material, the color, permeability to water, and some other environmental factors. That is the language.
Well, then one final question, because it'll come up if over time it wears out and it needs to be replaced, is that a new permit?
Well,
gets to the point where it needs to be replaced, is that requiring a new permit?
Such a lawyer answer. Yes and no. So what you couldn't do is pass a regulatory scheme that says when you have to replace the artificial turf, and this is, you know, this is what it must look like. however, think about code enforcement for your property maintenance code. If one falls into disrepair, that's a violation of your code enforcement for your property maintenance, which is different than whether or how they are installed and what standards to apply, which DEP apparently will be the one producing those rather than local agencies. It's just an effort to remove your home rule authority.
So it'd be Andrew, did the governor sign this bill?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
We're not signing it. We anticipate him signing.
I
do, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I'm actually putting this language to the town manager right now as we speak, so okay. You'll have it.
That does impact the town's regulations. Since 2014, the town has limited the application yep. of artificial turf to 25% of a person's front yard.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's out the window.
I thought we already had a regulation concerning anything that goes to 25 or 50%. Anything, it's a repair, not a replacement. So that would, if it's less than 25%, it's a repair.
And we'll be preempted on a few things.
Oh,
so.
Please. And God bless you for even bothering with it.
If I may, the agency is going to promulgate rules. So mm-hmm. the time that we see that come out, I'll make sure that you guys are informed and we can try to provide input on the rules.
It hasn't been signed yet.
No, sir.
Okay.
We appreciate that, Andrew, because it just seems with the list of the bills that you shared with us to consider, there's a great deal of work that our attorneys and our staff will have to do in order to implement the significant changes. So, thank you.
Mayor,
I have
one comment.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, yep. One comment. And again, this is a deep one, but in a matter of time, I'll just make a comment and we'll walk away. But it seems to me that Senate Bill 180 flies directly in the face of our resiliency plan. And we've been working on that plan for many, many, many years. And back to when I was on the planning board, we were working on our resiliency program and our plan. So am I correct in making that statement? Because again, the resiliency program we're working on, the minimum floor elevation, stormwater retention, construction of homes, it flies directly in the face of what I'm going to say we were required to do, but what we were trying to do to protect our citizens. It takes away potentially everything that we've been trying to accomplish. Is that correct?
You are absolutely correct. Our goal of making Ponce Inlet resilient will be adversely impacted by these kinds of bills.
And again, I know there's nothing we can do about it, but we can try. But yes. If you look at everything the county's been going through, and we keep preaching that, and you know, I'm getting a little compassionate here because it makes me throw up. But you know, the county has tried to start pushing forward and get to the point, and not a knock on Ponce, on the county, but where Ponce Inlet is. Edgewater's doing the same thing. So all of a sudden, am I understanding it correctly, that the brakes are going to be put on if this happens?
That's correct, yeah. If it's signed, and it's not just going forward, but it's retroactive until August of last year. So the ones that the county has passed, I believe Edgewater and New Smyrna have passed or will be passing soon. That's all null and void until October of 2027. Now, one thing that we are looking at is a way to perhaps make these, instead of regulations, make them voluntary guidelines. And so I've reached out to some colleagues of the county that say that their own attorneys have said that would be fine. And so we could do that in such a way, perhaps incentivize them. Then that would give at least people the option to do those things or we would pass a code essentially to make it to put in these voluntary options. So we're going to be exploring that further.
Thank you for doing that, Mike. Yeah,
that's awesome. Thank you.
Go ahead, Bill.
One quick one. There was one bill you were talking about. It was affordable housing and providing housing for, I guess, migrants, et cetera. Did I understand that correctly?
It wasn't in relation to migrants, but it was of the
employees.
Yes, so there actually is a piece of that. If I didn't say it, it may have been on the screen. There's a piece of that local governments can actually sponsor an affordable housing project for their employees.
The reason why I ask is because when I moved to Pompano in 1955, all of the farmers out in the Pompano-Fort Lauderdale area provided housing for all of the people that came in to do their picking, the planting, and the raising of the things, to the point that the federal government actually funded an elementary school for those migrants in 1967. It was a 5-year funding plan. So it was interesting that we're 50 years, 60 years later, they're talking about doing the same thing that has already done in the state of Florida.
Councilman, they're actually in... Perhaps you saw there was a bill related to migrant housing for legal migrant workers that did not pick up a single committee. I don't recall what's
I was just curious.
Yes, sir. I just want to say that may be what you're thinking.
Maybe
of.
Sometimes the old is better.
Does anyone have any other questions for Andrew? Okay. Andrew, thank you so much for this. And I don't like to miss an opportunity to let the council know just how important Andrew has been for this town, the hard work that he does. I've said this before, that this man says, Lois, this is who you have to see. I'm going to set up the appointment for you, and these are the parameters and the framework. Andrew has helped guide me, guide the town through a lot of this maze up in the legislature. So thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Mayor. Council, I appreciate it very much, and I will be around probably till the end of the meeting or so if there's anything. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now we will go to 13C, which is the National League of Cities Service Line Warranty Agreement with Home Service. Mike?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, this agreement is now in final form and ready for the council's consideration. The council may remember that back in December, we had a representative from HomeServe talk to the council about the benefits that the service offers, which is essentially it's a warranty program that would be made available to homeowners to cover the cost of any water line breaks or even sewer breaks or plumbing breaks within their home that are outside of the purview of the town's utility operations. Our responsibility and liability ends at the property line. So the town will cover any kind of breaks that happen within the right-of-way. Once it gets onto that person's property, it's their responsibility. This is exactly the same situation that happened to the Revords, where they had a leak just on their side of the meter, but there's nothing that the town could do about that. This program, it's entirely voluntary. I won't call it a partnership, but they're basically working with the town to provide this service to residents. There's an agreement in place, or there would be an agreement in place that would govern the use of this or how this would function, including the use of the town's logo on their marketing material. This comes with lots of disclaimers. You know, the town is not associated with this group in any kind of way. Town doesn't have any kind of liability or responsibility for what they do, but they are nonetheless working for the benefit of the residents of the town. The way this would work, there would be a link on the town's website that would go to their service. If people wanted to access it, they could do that through the town's website. They would also be sending out marketing to town residents for them to sign up. Again, it's completely voluntary. But then they handle all the billing and everything. So the town really has no part in it other than we are entering into this agreement with them to allow them to do this in the town. When the town council reviewed it last, which was in January, there were several conditions. One, that it included indemnification language in the marketing agreement, that the agreement would be reviewed by the town attorney, and that the town be added to the program's liability and insurance policy. That has now been done. You see on attachment 3, that's the certificate of liability insurance. Holly, with the town attorney's office, she has really done a great job in making sure that this is done to our attorney's satisfaction. And then you see that the indemnification language has been added as well. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. And they've done everything that the town council asked, so we're recommending approval.
Mike, thank you. Yes, it does look as if all the concerns that we have been addressed. And since our attorney drafted the marketing letter, it includes everything that we were concerned with. Does anyone have any questions at this time?
Well, I still want to voice my concern, and it just bothers me because they're in competition with FPNL that's been doing that for years, and they provide the same potential service. And the other one is that we derive some income from this process, and it just doesn't set well with me with those conditions in there. We're making money by allowing the use of our town, and we are in direct competition with FPNL. But if that's what the consensus is, I'll live with it.
Anyone else?
But in essence, that's only for the needs of sewage and water. It has nothing to do with electrical services coming into a facility or a building.
Well, and that's the same that FPNL's. I've seen that in my mailbox enough times to know it's both.
It's both
their electrical. It also takes the water line. It's the same coverage that this company is wanting to provide. Unless I'm wrong, I don't think so, though.
No, I agree with you. I think, in essence, what we're doing is we're providing HomeServe the ability to say that our municipality recognizes them as one that the municipality supports and encourages a citizen to use in the event they need that service.
Well,
it's a marketing ploy.
Bill?
I understood it that it was, if I read it right, I've listened to it enough in Pompano, where I'm from, got involved in it. And what Joe said about the sewage lines and that, and we're talking from the meter in, you're going to have to hire someone to do the job. They're saying that we're being sponsored, that the town knows that we're a good company and we're working with it. Am I wrong, Mike?
Yeah, the town doesn't make any kind of warranties about their service or anything, but they essentially handle it. So if someone signs up, it is voluntary, they sign up, then this company, they'll find local contractors to do the job, and then it's all done under their program.
Yeah,
it's an insurance policy, like all the other potential insurance policies
home health care,
you can buy for various things in your house. And so I wasn't comfortable about the town getting involved in it at all. That's it. But if that's what you guys want, I'll vote yes to it.
Patrick?
One thing that may assist you in your discussion, and I'm up front, this was drafted by Cliff and Holly New in our office, not by me. But in reviewing it, and the grant of license that the town is giving is non-exclusive. So should FPNL want to come in and do it, we're not saying we wouldn't enter into a license agreement with them, too. It's non-exclusive.
And I was going to ask you that, Gary. Were you asked to join any type of a service from FPNL with that literature? Was there anything offered? Do you know?
I save that every time it comes, thinking I should do that because my lines to my house are 500 feet long. And I'm thinking, there's a lot of possibility that something can go wrong there. Actually, the electric line is shorter because the transmission or the transformer sits in my front yard. So FPNL is responsible to get it to the transformer. So that's the shorter of the two. But my sewer line is actually a force main line 500 feet to the sanitary sewer in the street. So I haven't done it yet, but I keep thinking about it, so who knows?
Okay. But it's non-exclusive, the document that we would be signing, so we're not foreclosing anything. Does anyone have any other questions or concerns? No? Anyone in the audience? Yes, Mr. Carney.
Thank you, Mayor. John Carney, 38 Coastal Oak Circle. So I mostly want to just echo Mr. Smith's concerns that I just don't think, while I applaud the effort to bring some additional sources of revenue into the town, I think that's great to be looking at where else can the town get revenue besides taxes. Offering the town's name on this company in their marketing materials, I think is problematic for a few reasons. First of all, I don't know how many companies are out there selling this insurance. But if it's like any other insurance that you buy, if you go out and shop for insurance, you're going to find a wide range of prices. So for the town to endorse this, you know, that's kind of saying to some of the homeowners, maybe this is a good deal. And I don't know if we know if it is or it isn't. It may be. But I just don't think it's in the town's interest to be really seen as endorsing anybody's insurance company. I mean, they're in business to make money. They're making a profit on this. Then they're giving a kickback to the town. So their price, by definition, is possibly higher than somebody else's who's not providing that kickback to the town. So I think, you know, there's a lot of leeway here to see where competition could get a resident a much better deal. And so I would think if the town wanted to send something out to the homeowners to say, we've had issues with water lines breaking, we know it's a concern of the citizens, you know, and here are some resources where you can go do your homework and figure out if you want to buy this insurance and how much it should cost you and where to get it. I mean, that might be a good service to the community, but just having one company picking a winner, sending them out to market to our citizens, I think is a disservice. And you possibly are going to have citizens who really can't afford this kind of additional bill, you know, because if somebody can't afford the water line repair, maybe they're not really in a good position to buy insurance either. And when it shows up with a Ponce Inlet letterhead on it, they might think it's a great idea or might think it's even required. You know, it's just one of those things that there's sort of a moral hazard here that I hope you all will think through. And I think Mr. Smith has already kind of started down that road. And I just would ask you to consider those implications before you vote on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Attachment 5, the draft marketing letter, specifies that the use of the town of Ponce Inlet's name and logo is authorized for informational purposes only and does not constitute an endorsement, sponsorship, or partnership by or with the town of Ponce Inlet. Participation in the coverage plans service line warranty program is entirely voluntary, and the town of Ponce Inlet makes no representations or warranties regarding the products or service provided by the company. That, I know, was drafted in by our attorneys. That was a very significant piece of it. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So, given the concerns that have been expressed by one council member and by a member of the public, is there anything further you'd like to discuss on whether you wish to move forward with this for reasons for not or reasons to?
Mayor, I'd like to make one comment. And again, I know that, Michael, 2-3 months ago when this first came to play, the council was concerned about that. And that's the reason the language has been drafted. I understand what, you know, Mr. Carney is talking about, but Florida Power and Light, even though they're not utilizing our logo, they're still out there offering a service. And they are our provider of our power in Ponce Inlet. And there's other companies, but we chose Florida Power and Light. So I'm not opposed. Initially, several months ago when this first came up, I was uncomfortable. But based on the way that the agreement is written, I'm comfortable with it because it gives the resident an opportunity. And again, yeah, John is probably correct that, you know, they're going to say, oh, it came from Ponce Inlet. But I think maybe if Michael reviews what goes out there before it hits to make sure that they're following the way that our agreement is written, I'm fine with it.
Okay, and Bill and Joe. Anything, Joe?
Yeah, I see it only as offering an option to a homeowner, and it fortifies the homeowner who may not be super involved in issues like this with as home ownership, and say, well, the city said it's good, so let me start there. And we're not eliminating anybody. We're just giving them as an option with the city saying this has been a vetted organization that can do the job.
Thank you. Does anyone have any comments based on what was just set up here right now? No. Yeah, Mr. Carney.
John Carney, 38 Coastal Oak Circle. So I've never bought this kind of insurance, so I don't know if this provider has a good rate or not a good rate, but I would hope that somebody either in Mike's office or somebody had shopped this around to see, you know, are we going to put the Ponce Inlet logo on something that costs twice as much as the competitors, or is it at least competitive? Maybe it's not the lowest, but maybe they have better product and it costs, you know, more than the bottom, but it's not twice as much as what you could get this coverage for. And I have no idea, but I would hope before you all sign up with these guys that if somebody can answer that question.
Well, if you are a single-family homeowner, you have seen FPNL's charges, and you have a comparison because they don't give up lightly. I mean, I've seen that at least 8, 9, 10 times maybe. It comes periodic every 2 or 3 months. Yeah. They market it heavily, and it costs in the single digits a month is what it is, $5 or $6, $7, somewhere in that neighborhood, I remember.
I want to be sure that we're not, as a town, pushing people towards something that's not a good deal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Anyone else? Anyone in the audience? Okay, seeing none, I'll take a motion?
I'll make a motion. Okay. I'll make a motion to approve the marketing agreement with Home Services as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No, I voted yes, like I said I would. It's unanimous.
The motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Gary. Okay. Now we are up to 13D, a discussion of the updates to board appointment procedures, board application forms, and bylaws.
Ms. Tribano will present this.
No,
it's not.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. What you have in front of you is just some suggestions and changes to board appointment procedures, board application forms, and the bylaws. Over the past few years, staff has identified several ways to improve how we recruit and appoint members to volunteer boards. The goal is to create a more accessible, streamlined process that encourages greater community participation. These updates involve refining our appointment procedures, application forms, and bylaws to ensure consistency and clarity. The current board appointment procedures were last visited or revised in March of 2018. Since that time, operational changes have brought the need for improvement. Per the current adopted board procedures set forth in Resolution 2018-03, any formal changes must be approved by the town council. Staff has suggested some suggestions. The key proposed changes from staff are alternative to meeting attendance requirement. Currently, applicants must attend a board meeting before even applying. The new proposal allows applicants to review recordings and minutes from a minimum of 2 meetings, which would give them the understanding of the fundamentals of the board. We would still encourage applicants to attend a meeting. This is just another avenue to assist them with this requirement. Financial disclosure process. Financial disclosure form filing is now handled through the State Ethics Commission. We will remind new board members that are required to file the submitted one form that this is to be done within 30 days of the appointment. Complete applications. Okay. To ensure fairness and efficiency, staff proposes that we only accept completed applications to forward to council. This would allow staff to ask for more clarification if needed on the application. Reappointment process for current and proposed applicants for board members. All current members seeking reappointment will be asked to submit a new application. This creates a more open process, gives council a fuller picture of all interested candidates, while ensuring staff has the most up-to-date information on all members. Reminding staff that regular seats are held for a 3-year term, where alternates are a 1-year term. In addition to these proposed changes, the Cultural Services Board has also asked for a change in the meeting time from 5:30 to 10 a.m. This recommendation was proposed by the board, and if approved by council, would be reflected in the updated bylaws. Additionally, all board bylaws will be revised to reference the most current appointment resolution for easier future updates. Application forms will be standardized for consistency across all boards. Staff is asking or requesting at this time council's feedback on these proposed changes. Once input is received, revisions will be made accordingly and brought back to council for a final approval at future meeting.
Kim, thank you so much. And I think that these were very needed changes, and I'm really appreciative that you brought this to us. And I personally am very comfortable with the cultural board's change in the start time. So for me, everything that you said is something that I would find acceptable. So thank you for that. Can we have any discussion on this?
Nope.
No,
sounds
I think
good.
It does sound very good. All of it sounds very, very good. Anyone in the audience wish to address this? So since you have the agreement of the council, I guess what is next is the resolution will be brought back. Okay. Do you need anything else from us? Anyone?
No, I think we got it. We'll just bring it back. This was just presented for discussion in case you did have some questions or concerns or wanted changes.
Well, I want to thank you. It's been a few years since we've discussed it, and it's excellent. It addresses what some of the concerns that have popped up. So thank you so much, Kim.
So what we'll do is we'll bring back the resolution and then all of the materials for all the boards, and then you can see them all once and then vote on them.
Okay, and then cultural services will change time.
Yes, it'll be updated in their new bylaws.
Okay, great. Okay, now we are up to 13E, which is a discussion by our attorney on the status of our long-term rental permits. Patrick?
Okay, thank you, Mayor. In your packets is a memorandum that was provided by Drew Smith in our office. As you know, just by way of background, in January of 2022, the town passed Ordinance 2022-03, creating Chapter 18, Article 8 of your Code of Ordinances, governing rental property maintenance program. The purpose of that program is to provide for periodic inspection of rental properties, residential or commercial, unless exempt under Florida law, to ensure they meet basic minimum standards for public health, safety, and welfare. In no respect was your ordinance meant to govern the landlord-tenancy relationships in any way. But an issue came up with the town, and the town sought an attorney general's opinion because in 2023, the Florida legislature amended Chapter 83 of Florida statutes. That chapter deals with landlord-tenant relationships and governs them. And it passed preemption language, which included some vague language in there. The part in particular that you requested the opinion from the Attorney General on and were not granted the opportunity to get an opinion from the Attorney General was that this section supersedes any government regulations on matters covered under this part, including but not limited to the screening process used by a landlord in approving tenancies, security deposits, rental agreement applications and fees associated with those applications, terms and conditions of rental agreements, the rights and responsibilities of the landlord and tenant, disclosures concerning the premises, the dwelling unit, the rental agreement, or the rights and responsibilities of the landlord and tenant, and fees charged by the landlord, or notice requirements. All of those things I just said govern the relationship between the landlord and the tenant. But the issue became, it says, including but not limited to, so does that affect your public health and safety ordinances governing inspection of the property? And so when we looked at it without a clear direction from the court or from the AG, how do we address this? And Drew offered this opinion to you, and the way to address it is through some amendments to your code. Very modest amendments to your code, but that make it very clear what your code covers and what it doesn't. The single best thing he included in there, in my opinion, was addressing the statutory change in 2023 directly on point, and to recognize that the state has expressly preempted local governments in the regulation of residential tenancies, the landlord-tenant relationship, and all other matters covered by Chapter 83. town also recognizes that Chapter 83 does not regulate or create standards for the maintenance or inspection of rental properties. And to the extent there was any vagueness or ambiguity in your code, he proposes corrections to your code, which you could pass through an ordinance. In there, he includes the underline and strike-throughs to address them. And they, in some bolded language, he explains the reasons for some of the strike-throughs. But it is, in my words, it is all meant simply to provide clarification about what it is you're regulating and what it is you're not, so that there can never be a question of the preemption. And I covered this already, but Chapter 83 governs the relationship between the landlord and tenant. There's nothing in there about inspections for public health and safety and welfare outside things like, you know, mold in the unit, things like that, that govern the relationship and the process and procedures for it. So he's proposed some common sense regulations both to Chapter 18 but also to your land development regulations, just to clarify that, and is looking for or requesting that you direct us to craft an ordinance with some whereas clauses that will provide the legislative intent to, it'll be duplicative, but that further clarifies and addresses Chapter 83 and what it is the town's doing.
Patrick, I want to thank you. I want to thank Drew, the entire law firm. I think they did an excellent job with this memo. It's exactly, I believe, what we had asked of your firm, of how do we move forward at this time, and you've provided us with the answer. And it sure makes sense to me. Does anyone have any questions? It's good, yeah, right?
Just a comment. This was wonderful.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you didn't understand
job.
It,
right.
You do now.
Right.
And I'm very serious about that. I had a general idea, but to, I'll say, go back and combat against what we were not told by the Attorney General's office, this is what we should have, in my opinion, and I'm not knocking our Attorney General, but we should have received back from them. But I'm 1,000% behind this. I'm ready to move forward with it, put it in our rearview yep. mirror.
Ready to move forward with it, right?
Well,
Gary?
And I just want to affirm that it does not in any way affect our permit requirement or our rental permit activity that we now do.
Yep. Exactly. I think the most important thing is that it's actually telling us that the most important part of the whole operation is the inspection, which we knew up front.
That's what we...
We've said that, I mean...
The intent.
I'm not going to get into some stories of the renters in Lighthouse Village and some of them.
Well...
Bang on your door and who's the slumlord here? You know, those kind of things. So I mean, he worked on 10 different sections and changed them significantly yeah. to put the inspection at the height of the whole policy.
Right.
Yes, it did. It was
great.
It was excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I'll pass that along to Drew.
Please. Is there anyone in the public that wishes to comment on this or question this? Okay. There's no one. So you have instructions, I think, to move forward with the recommended changes and all and to be brought back to us.
We'll do
Thank
so.
You. Thank you.
You
so much. Okay, we are now down to, from the town council, Gary. What would you like to share with us?
My same comment that I usually do. We had another very productive meeting, and we appreciate the comments from the audience, and we're just moving along, getting things done.
Thank you, Gary. Joe?
Just another productive meeting, as Gary just said, and I would like to please extend a compliment to Kim McCall for the detailed responses that she made to her questions from Steve. I think she did a really super excellent job with that.
Skip?
And I'll ditto that one. That was actually really good, Kim. The money ladies. First, I want to start by saying congratulations to Mayor Lois Perinsky for receiving the Florida League of Cities Home Rule Hero Award.
So I got to scratch that off of mine.
Thank you.
Sorry. And I think everyone knows about it. But again, the Home Rule HERO Award recipients are local government officials, both elected and non-elected, who consistently respond to the League's request to reach out to members of legislature and help give us a local perspective on an issue. They work tirelessly throughout the legislative session to promote local voice, making local choices, protecting home rule for Florida municipalities. Mayor, thank you. And again, you have taught me a lot about having to stay on top of things and understand them. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Skip.
Again, I attended the Volusia County Elected Officials Roundtable May the 12th at the Daytona Beach Airport, chaired by Mayor Lois Perinsky. There were some key takeaways that I picked up and a lot that we've already discussed, the key legislative bills. So I will skip over that for time issues. But I'm still very concerned about Senate Bill 180, and I know we all are. I won't get back on it, but I get a little upset when I talk about that one. Volusia County Public Safety Initiative. There was a presentation and discussion and update of the Volusia County Dangerous Dog Regulations, which I never thought about that before until the little kid was tragically killed. But it's enhancing the community safety and the animal controls. So I guess, Michael, my question is, I know we have a policy here, I think, but if we don't, should we? If we do, should we look at updating that?
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask Chief Glazier to respond to that one.
We still have the feral cat program.
Hey, good afternoon. Jeff Glazier, Pine Sutton Police Department. We do have an ordinance on dangerous dogs. We can always look at it to review it to see if it, you know, needs to meet the new updated standards.
Right.
But we do have one, and we haven't had any incidents recently in Pine Sutton. So.
Yeah, and Michael, I think, you know, from the insurance standpoint and things like that, if you could get that, Chief, and just a suggestion to take a look at it. Preparing for hurricane season, Volusia County did touch on that, and I know everyone pretty much has the numbers, but projection of tropical storms are 13 to 18, hurricanes 7 to 10, major hurricanes 3 to 5. You know, that's a shot in the dark, but they did make the statement that the El Nino, the wet pattern is moving to a NSSO, which is a warm pattern, which what that means to us is more storms coming out of the Atlantic side. And I'm not going to make the comment that that gentleman made, but it's not potentially as bad as what it sounds. But history has it that when the storms come in from the Atlantic side, potentially they go more to the Carolinas. So we're hoping that's correct. One thing I'd like to ask and see if the council would like to do is maybe at the next council meeting do a update on where we are as far as our storm preparedness. I know year after year after year we've all worked on it, but it might be something our residents could be interested in. And Dan, I know your group is all over it. And my comment in here was this is not something that I know Dan and team, it's every day. It's every day of the year. It's not, oh, gee, storm season's 30 days away. It's all the time, but our residents, I'd like them to hear that of where we are with that part of it. Volusia County also discussed the turtle nesting season. And again, it's been a little slower in the Pine Sentinel area because of the dredging. There was a situation where yesterday we had a leatherback turtle that actually came in behind our house. And I don't know if anyone's ever seen a leatherback turtle trail when they come out of the beach. I have not, but it is like, I kid you not, this wide. It's massive. She started digging her cavity and got spooked away, and she left, and the turtle patrol ladies were there. And, I mean, it was kind of depressing because we do not get loggerheads in Pond Sentinel. They're more towards Ormond. But has a good ending. This morning we were walking the beach. Let me think of her name. Jamie Whitaker, which actually works for Volusia County, she actually is riding in a golf cart all day long, watching the progress. She stopped and said, hey, I know you guys saw the turtle yesterday. And she said, we're all disappointed. But she said at 2 a.m. this morning, we're 99.9% sure that that turtle made its nest in New Smyrna and it was successful. So even though we're not happy that we lost the leatherback here in Ponce, The good thing is they would have had to relocate that nest. And I know they continue to say that the nest is, you know, when they relocate it, it's not a big issue. But if they move the egg one way or the other, it's over. So, again, happy about that. Closing on the beach, the last topics I have, and I'll consolidate all this. There was a letter that was sent out to the residents beachside about sand fencing. And, Bill, I know you received one, and you asked me about it when you were up in Atlanta. What they're going to do is, once everything is finalized with Halifax Paving and before they start replenishing the sand, anyone that has an issue with the sand fence, because they're talking about potentially taking the sand fences up, which did not sit very well with me. But what they're saying now is, if the sand fencing is buried or if the sand fencing is next to the dune in a vegetative system around it, the fencing will stay there. If it's not, then the administrative staff working with the counties, through the county's direction, through our coastal engineer, will reach out to individual property owners in advance and discuss the sand fencing. Their goal is to, if the sand fencing needs to come down, take the fencing down, bring the sand in, and then at the owner's cost, put the sand fencing back up. But they do not want to destroy the sand. But, Bill, from where you're sitting, you're in good shape because it's almost buried.
I actually sent a letter with the pictures of the poles.
Correct.
Explaining to Jessica that those poles were augured in to where you hit the cement of the sand.
Right.
That if you take those 90 poles down would cause more damage to the dunes. Right. She hasn't responded back.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah, you're in good shape because I looked at yours this morning in the way you're sloping down in the vegetation. But again, the whole key point is they sent out a generic letter to everyone, which got everyone upset. But they're going to deal with it on an individual basis as they move along. The last two things, and these are actually kind of funny. Suzanne was at the roundtable meeting on Monday. Jessica was on vacation. So I had a couple of conversations with her about some issues from the residents, and one particular one was about speeding. And I made a joke with her. I said, I know this is the old Daytona track, but the residents are concerned because these guys think it's their own personal racetrack, and they are moving. I mean, this is 24/7. They probably weren't educated enough to know that there is a speed limit down there, so that's actually been handled. The last piece, and this I like closing with this one, there was a resident that requested and made a statement that the sand that's going to be to the north of Ocean View is going to be brought in by ship. I was like, haven't heard that one. So Suzanne, in her own little witty way, she said, Skip, I'm sorry, our ship has not come in. So that's all I have. And again, congratulations, Mayor.
Thank you, Skip.
I'm not going to repeat what Joe said concerning Kim, but the responses to Steve I thought were excellent. Just a couple things. September 14th, Council, put it on your calendar. Mike, you're going to be receiving invitations. The shelter is going to be celebrating 1,000 residents being placed in housing, and 93% of them still there. We hit 940 last month out of the 1,700 people that have actually started the program that are still in housing. And it was really kind of interesting because of those 988 of them are veterans. Our record in house in placement, our record in placement was 33. Last month, they placed 37 people in permanent housing. I don't know if you saw the newspaper Monday. I wasn't going to bring this up, but I am. The last 2 months, it's been kind of turmoil at the shelter. A person at the shelter, a new board member, came in and said that his town, Italian, you use your hands, but his town is no longer, his council people, he feels, are no longer supporting the shelter because they don't use it that much. They're only sending a few people there, on and on and on and on. They're spending a lot of money. And it really set me back because the point is not the money you spend. It's the result of what happens when you're looking at Volusia County spending over the next 4 years, close to, $1.2 million, Daytona Beach spending $1.6 million, and 1,000 people, 93% of them still in housing. So I said, and I talked to them about it, but so I went to the council meeting last Tuesday, I think it was a week ago Tuesday, and or maybe even this past Tuesday, I don't know. But when I went up there and spoke, the comments that were made by the individual that's on the board were completely erroneous. All four board members said they support the shelter 100%, to the point that one of the board council members asked that the town or the city put together a letter, because we've been with them, so they're part of the original group of board members for the shelter. It was so shocking to hear this. And they put a letter together saying they will support the shelter in the future as long as they possibly can, understanding that it is a yearly commitment, but that that council is committing to that yearly committee. So something down the road someday, because, ladies and gentlemen, we are the original group that can say, look what we've done, and what's it costing us, Kim, what, 14,000 a year, mm-hmm. something like that?
Yep.
So just to throw that out, and the reason why we're going to have the September 14th get-together is just going to be an open house at the shelter, because we feel, based on the 37 this past month, we will probably hit that 1,000 sometime July, August. Last thing, thank you for letting me speak down there concerning Sherry. And the other thing, I guess it was the reason why I was quoted in the newspaper Monday about the belief of what the shelter has accomplished and the partnership with Ormond Beach. I got cornered, and I was quoted a second time about Pope Leo. So I don't get in the newspaper anymore. I used to be in the newspaper all the time for getting in trouble when I was the principal of Plantation High School. So I was shocked. I was shocked, pleasantly shocked. And again, what Skip said was beautiful and what you have done in so many years. But aren't you this coming Thursday, or week Thursday, getting another award by Volusia County?
Yes, thank you. Yes, it's the Volusia League of Cities Mayor Blaine O'Neill Award for...
And it's offered once a year to one individual,
yes.
I think it is. And
yeah.
Again, We got the best.
Well, let me tell you, a lot of my work is with the help of the council and also the staff, is I can't do what I do without the help of everyone, so thank you. Are you done, Bill?
I can talk forever, but
no,
I'm
that's
finished.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to thank Councilman White for being in attendance at the roundtable this past Monday, and you gave an excellent presentation on what was discussed, because those topics were timely. And if anyone is interested in really hearing those presentations, the Volusia Roundtable of Elected Officials, it's streamed. You can get it on the county's website, and I believe you all already received the PowerPoint presentations that go along with each of those. Now, part of the, a subcommittee was formed with the to be a part of the Volusia Roundtable, and I attended the subcommittee. That's on stormwater management and flooding. That subcommittee reports back to the roundtable. And that subcommittee is making strides in its mission to identify what it is as a county and municipalities. What can we all do to address our stormwater management and flooding issues? We have the benefit at each of those meetings, the county attorney, the public works director, Ben Bartlett, and then we have individual presenters from the Florida Department of Transportation, St. John's Water Management, and we will soon have a representative of the American Flood Coalition. We're working together, all 16 municipalities and the county, and there is a request for data from each of the municipalities, and the reason for that is we're trying to join together, see if there are regional projects that will help with our flooding issues in this county. And we're looking at the different funding sources for flood mitigation projects. There's a data request out to all cities so we can create a geographic information system, the GIS, that will provide overlays and maps in map form that include where the stormwater drains are located, who owns the stormwater drains, projects that are currently in play,